When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
And welcome to another podcast. It's FliesOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works and Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. Joining me now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Brother, thanks for coming on the show.
It is a pure pleasure to be with you, brother.
So we've had some interesting economic news, obviously, earlier this week. Wednesday, the Dow dropped like a rock. There's this inverted curve in the bond market sending messages that we're due for a recession. Well, whenever you have the potential of a recession, some people view it almost as an opportunity. And our friends at MSNBC absolutely blaming everything on the tariffs with China and the relationship with China on the downturn in the economy, are taking the opportunity to push the TPP. Here's Chuck Todd yesterday.
Alexei, is I do think the Democratic Party is split on how to confront the president on his management of this China issue. I look at data, and the data actually says the Joe Biden is the one being smarter here. Talk up TPP. Mm-hmm. The danger here for the Democrats are the ones going, we want to get tough on China too, but we don't want to do it that way. Yep. Which is, you're actually not, if you're looking to get tough on China, you're going to pick Trump. If you're looking to acknowledge a global economy and figure out other ways to do it, well, then you're going to pick another way. You can't just sell a warmed over version of Trump.
Yes, and we actually have reached out to all of the Democratic campaigns and asked them about their China policy and strategy, given it's early in the cycle, but these are obviously things they should be thinking about. And several of them said they wouldn't immediately undo all that President Trump has done and is trying to do on China, which speaks directly to your point, that they don't necessarily have a plan.
But Brad, isn't there a disconnect between the base of both parties these days hates trade agreements?
It's but multilateral trade.
But broadly, there's still, wait a minute, most people realize we live in a global economy. It's stupid.
I think nothing exempt.
Was he watching the debate? Did he not see Joe Biden back away from the TPP? Did he not see Joe Biden say, TPP, I'd have to renegotiate it? Now, I'm not sure I believe Biden, but the point is, Biden isn't necessarily talking up the TPP right now.
No, because it would defeat him. it would lose. I just want to emphasize.
And by the way, what does the TPP have to do with China?
Well, it does have, I mean, in fairness, it does have some things to do with China because it is a reaction to China, right? It is a effort to, you know, kind of create a bargaining situation, a position for the U.S.
Yeah, that's what Wall Street, you know, that's what Wall Street likes to say.
No, but it's a legitimate argument. The problem is that, A, it won't work. It's not going to succeed in that because China has already, in the time, even if at one point in history it might have had some function, China's kind of shift toward manufacturing in other countries and the Chinese companies shift has rendered it, you know, a ridiculous idea. In fact, the fact that people on TV are talking about the TPP restarting it 10 years after, 12 years after it was sort of floated out there is, you know, I mean, it's literally like talking about, you know, we're gonna beat these guys with a fast machine.
The vast part of the TPP isn't even trade. It's a disaster for consumers. It's a disaster for the environment.
Yep.
It's terrible for local sovereignty. Does Chuck Todd do any homework on this, or is just the TPP just some sort of benevolent verb?
This is what I'm saying. It's sort of like, oh, we're gonna deal with all the challenges of, you know, like, you know, Facebook and the internet and everything like that by giving everybody a fax machine, right? it's ancient, like, you know, like it's like a solution from before now.
I know, but
so
this
really bad.
This adherence, the adherence to this religion of free trade is so absurd.
Well, the other thing that's really bad about it is that the problem with TPP is, as it was any way that it's constructed, is it locks in all sorts of challenges as regards human rights. Bad, you know, it's not good for what you want to, you know, move toward in countries around the world. So it's even people who weren't worried about American workers were not fans of the TPP. It had a lot of problems. And so it was rejected. It was rejected initially. In, you know, if you look back at the 2015 campaign into 2016, it was rejected because not Donald Trump, but Bernie Sanders went out there with an absolute fierce opposition to the TPP, rooted in the traditional civil rights, economic justice, you know, environmental community coalition that developed all the way back to fight, you know, the China free trade in 1999-2000.
At the end of Chuck Todd's little soliloquy there, he's like, well, people just have to acknowledge that there's global trade. Yes, there's global trade without the TPP.
Yeah.
It's so stupid.
I think you can acknowledge that. And see, here's where the problem is.
You know, he's really an idiot.
I don't know that. He had me on the show, so he's been very nice.
Oh, I think he's an idiot when it comes to policy. He can tell you how every corn cob in Nebraska voted in 1968, but he knows nothing about policy.
Well, okay. So here's what I will say about the problem. And where I think you're wrong to pick on Chuck Todd.
Oh, I love picking on sleepy-eyed Chuck Todd.
I'm going to let you do it. But here's what I'm going to say. Chuck Todd is no different from the baseline across major media on these issues, right? Basically, the baseline argument is that, you know, free trade is good, and we should be for it, and that people who are against it, this is where the problem comes in, that people who are against free trade in the model that it has been developed are somehow Luddites or, you know, folks who, you know, isolationists, people who don't want to deal with the rest of the world. Wrong. The great internationalists, the people who are really interested in a full relationship with the rest of the world, a relationship not just based on the demands of multinational corporations, but on human rights, environmental concerns, concerns about workers, people who really care about the whole package, right? They're not for these kinds of free trade deals. If you look at the coalitions that have developed in opposition to this, you know, they're remarkable coalitions that have tremendous connections across borders and, you know, with, you know, working class people and farmers and environmentalists in different countries with human rights activists around the world. And so, you know, the problem I have with this argument is that the same people who will go on television and say the Democratic Party really has to, you know, grow beyond its traditional messages. It has to reach out to more people, which is exactly correct. It has to mobilize communities that it hasn't always invested in mobilizing. Absolutely true. And you know where you can see the coalitions that the Democratic Party should be and where the Democratic Party ultimately, if it's going to win in 2020, will have to be. It needs the kinds of coalitions that were developed, that have been developed over the years, to object to free trade deals that harm people in the United States, working class people of all races, all backgrounds, in the United States, and that harms genuine development in countries around the world.
Well, it ties Conor Lamb and Ilhan Omar. Right.
That's very well said. And also, by the way, if we look at what they're actually saying, right, it ties Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren with pretty much the rest of the field.
Yeah, John Delaney's kind of the odd man out here.
excuse me. The only objection I have to that is the concept that he's the odd man out only on one thing.
You have got to see, as he begs for money on Facebook, how people respond. It is hilarious. All right, so this didn't end with sleepy-eyed Chuck Todd, as the president calls him.
Stop picking on Chuck Todd.
Oh, no, no. Ali Velshi, the Canadian, continued.
Look, he's been roundly criticized for the way he's handled this. Not critical of the fact that he and some of his supporters believe that China needs to be dealt with differently. You, too, have had views. So, and so many of your supporters have had views that we lose out to manufacturing that comes from low-wage countries like China. Watching what you're watching now, how would a President Bernie Sanders deal with trade issues differently? Because you were against the TPP. You have come out against a lot of these trade agreements. So how would you handle matters differently so that we don't get ourselves into the pickle we're in right now?
Well, first of all, you don't do trade policy by tweet. You don't have a belligerent policy toward our allies all over the world. What you do is sit down with the stakeholders, which is labor, which are farmers, and you work out a trade policy which works for ordinary Americans and not just large corporations, which has historically been what our trade policy is about. Look, the truth is that if you looked at NAFTA and PNTR with China, that has cost us some 4 million jobs. So I happen to believe in trade. I'm a strong believer in trade, but it cannot be unfettered free trade, which it really is not. It's nothing free about it. But it has to be fair trade, which protects American workers and farmers.
Senator, when you got into government, trade, I'm making this up, but it was somewhere around 20% of global GDP. It's now somewhere around 60% of GDP. The world got richer for it. GDP is higher. Corporate profitability is higher. The fact is there's more money because of trade. We haven't used that money to train people, to retrain people, to equip people for the future. Is trade really the enemy, or is how we deal with the profits from trade the problem?
Well, Ali, I think trade is one of the problems. Automation and artificial intelligence, which are going to cost us many, many jobs, are another part of the problem. But to answer your question, when we talk about the overall economy, it's more than trade. You have to look at a situation where today you have three people owning more wealth than the bottom half of American society. That's not just trade. There's a lot of factors involved there. You have major corporations like Amazon not paying a nickel in federal income taxes. You got half of the American people working paycheck to paycheck. 87 million Americans.
Okay, so you get the point. So, you know, whenever they go to the training thing, or we just didn't retrain people. Well, why should we have
Clinton's
to?
Clinton's argument. No, but that was Clinton's argument on NAFTA, right? It really worked out great.
Yeah, terrific.
You know, I mean, look, as you well know, and I've said this 1,000 times, I'll say it from the highest mountain, the promise of retraining is heard by most Americans as a threat. You know, not a promise. It's sort of like, hey, we're going to retrain you, right? And it's sort of like, my job's going away, isn't it? You know, I mean, people aren't that stupid. You know, they know what's going on there, and they also know that the retraining often, you know, is, you know, how you can help the robot stock the boxes at the Amazon warehouse. It's not a pretty picture. And so here's where Ali Velshi's question, you know, was based in facts, but wrong in some premises. You tell me, Sly, in the 1950s and the 1960s in the United States, when one parent could work and support the family and get a house, get, you know, oaked, get, you know what I mean, get the kids off to college, the whole bit, you know, was that somehow horribly worse than where we're at now? Now, I'm not trying to go back to the 50s, but what I'm saying is this concept that somehow you know, trade has created more wealth, right? It's created bigger numbers, but it hasn't necessarily created the level of economic and social, that's not a capital S, but a small s, economic and social security in society. And so trade hasn't worked. It has failed. And it is why people are very, very unsettled by it, uncomfortable with it. Now, does that mean that it will never work? No, of course, trade is real, and the best way to understand trade is that understand it like we understand air. This is a great lesson. We all need air. Air is a good thing, but polluted air is a problem. Right now, we have polluted trade. It is polluted by corporate profiteering. that places the bottom line of investors ahead of workers, human rights, the environment, and a host of other issues. And so what we need to do is change how we trade and what our standards are. And what Sanders said at the start of that answer was exactly right. You bring the stakeholders in and you build from the concerns of workers, environmentalists, communities, human rights activists, global human rights activists, and you build toward answers that actually make it better for the whole world.
Well, and we didn't even get into the environmental aspect. We'll take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at SlysOffice.com.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
We're back at SlysOffice.com with John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. So this is really remarkable. I want to talk about something local as we start this second half. This is from WMTV in Madison.
In light of two recent mass shootings, Governor Tony Evers held a press conference this morning saying it's common sense that the background check process should be the same for everyone. Under current federal law, only licensed gun dealers must conduct background checks when selling a firearm. This means anyone can bypass the background check by purchasing a firearm from an unlicensed seller, such as at a gun show, online, or at auctions. The new bill would force a background check for all firearm purchases here in the state.
No matter what kind of firearm you're buying or where you're buying it from, the process should be the same for everybody. That's not a radical notion or concept. It's a moderate one. In Wisconsin, we just call it common sense.
GOP leaders have said they don't support such a move, and Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said the legislature was very unlikely to take up a universal background check proposal. Live in the studio, Caroline Peterson, NBC 15 News.
Would it be fair to say that I'm pro-Second Amendment?
Oh, I would say that you are. Yes, I would say that you're pro-Second Amendment, but I think you've evolved to a pretty, I think you're pretty close to where the average gun owner is. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, not the NRA. But I have to tell you, these Republicans, they're the biggest idiots in the world. I mean, I can't possibly imagine why they're being intransigent at this point about universal background checks. I mean, Tony Evers should hang that around their necks. Can you imagine, the Democrats just picked up a suburban seat in Wauwatosa that goes into Waukesha County.
The only seat that they flipped.
Right.
All right.
Well, there's some other seats like that. But even in rural Wisconsin, I heard Jeff Wagner on WTMJ yesterday. First, he ripped Robin Voss and this whole Jimmy Anderson thing. And then he said,
right, too.
What's wrong with background checks?
Oof, man, if Jeff Wagner's there, then when you've lost Jeff Wagner. Look, here's the bottom line. Wagner, as we should note, I think is a former, prosecutor?
Yes.
Is that right? So he's somebody who gets a lot of this stuff. So you'd expect he'd ask that logical question. Here's the thing about it. Gun politics evolves just like every other kind of politics evolves. And if you run the campaign of 8 years ago or 16 years ago or 30 years ago, you will lose, right? I mean, it's just a matter of when the old tricks kind of stop working. And my sense is that on these gun issues, we have reached a pivot point where it is now possible but hard, to advance a sensible response to gun violence, right? To speak up and get some real changes made without political damage, right? Without losing politically. And think that Voss is making one of many mistakes in being so intransigent in this. But I also think that, I hate to be too geeky on this, but I think this comes back to gerrymandering. You know, that Voss knows full well that, you know, you do have some districts where that could be, now this could be an issue that might shift, might flip Republican districts, even quite Republican districts in some suburban areas, and maybe even some rural areas. But the question is, can his incumbents win a primary against somebody who said they went soft on guns? And, like, imagine a Luther Olson, right, as an example. Does he support background checks and stuff like that, which would win on, you know, polling in his district, I genuinely believe, but then face a primary from somebody who says Luther Olson went soft on guns? So it's not about the November election. It's actually, to some extent, about the primary in August. And I think the Republican Party is in a, they're in a kind of a bind here. They've decided to go with the no, right? No response to what's going on. And my gut tells me that they could lose three or four of their members on this issue if the campaign is run in the right way.
I mean, Tony Evers didn't exactly reach for the stars on this one. It was just a pretty baseline.
it's sort of like, you know, can we kind of just do a little something here? You know, it's not a radical proposal in any sense. In fact, it's a very thoughtful baseline proposal rooted, and this is one of the things people complain about with Evers sometimes, it's rooted in what should be doable in the circumstance that we're in, right, where you have divided governance and that. So he's actually putting forward a very moderate, very simple proposal for reform that in any moment in Wisconsin before, I guess I would say, you know, the mid-2000s, you know, like 2000. I think some of this started during the Doyle years, but certainly into the Walker years. Anytime before that, you know, after the incidents that have occurred, in fact, frankly, to be honest, I think after probably, remember the Sikh temple shooting, right?
Right.
I think after that, Wisconsin would have moved in any previous historical.
Right, right.
Mode.
All right, let's, obviously, Donald Trump is not doing well right now. Fox News poll has him in the 30s against most of the Democrats. It's been quite an interesting week. He had a rally in Manchester, New Hampshire, Thursday night. Here he is.
That guy's got a serious weight problem. Go home, start exercising.
All right, 30 seconds later.
There's never been a movement like this, never. Our movement is built on love, and it is.
Except for that guy.
The markets have gone through the roof since November 9th. That's the day after I won the election. So I won the election. The markets went up thousands of points. Things started happening. You started doing things that you would have never, even though I didn't get sworn in until January 20th. But they refused to do that. And let me tell you, if for some reason I wouldn't have won the election, these markets would have crashed. And that'll happen even more so in 2020. See, the bottom line is, I know you like me, and this room is a love fest, I know that. But you have no choice but to vote for me, because your 401ks, down the tubes, everything's going to be down the tubes. So whether you love me or hate me, you got to vote for me.
So, Susan.
Whoa. There's.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah. I heard that this morning on a broadcast. And here's the thing. Pause, take a deep breath. You just heard 100% of the forward going, and, you know, kind of the public Donald Trump reelection message. Now, he'll have all of the, you know, his backstory, right? The invasions and the anti-immigrant stuff and the xenophobia and the racism. That'll all be there. But his, you know, kind of quote-unquote positive message going forward is going to be exactly what he said there. And if the economy is still at roughly the place it is now, even with some of the instability we have seen in the last few days, that is a message that Democrats have to be prepared to counter, right? Because, and this is a very dangerous game here. Trump knows this. And if Democrats say, well, of course we're due for a correction, right? Due for a correction is essentially the same as telling some, you know, working person, yeah, we're going to retrain you. When a politician says due for the correction, that means things are going to get bad, okay? And so Democrats have to really get serious about having a positive message, a forward-going message about how they make the economy work better than it is now.
Well, nobody's done a better job of that this year than Elizabeth Warren.
That's precisely right. And to be honest, Bernie talks about it to some extent. Warren goes much deeper on it. And frankly, there are some other candidates who are very, very solid on this and can talk about it. But I'm gonna give them all a at best passing grade, probably a few failures, and say, no, you got to pause and stop. And I take them off the campaign trail, and for a week, you know, put them with some good counselors, Robert Reich and some other people, and have them sit around. And every morning for their discussions about how they're going to frame their message, they should listen to that clip you just played from Trump.
All right.
And then they should say, how do we counter that?
All right. Here is what else happened on Thursday.
President Trump today, in an unprecedented use of the powers of his office, pressuring Israel to deny entry to two of his political enemies, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar of Minnesota and Rashida Tlaib of Michigan.
It would be a terrible thing, frankly, for Israel to let these two people who speak so badly about Israel come in.
Trump brought down his Twitter hammer this morning, firing off this message. It would show great weakness if Israel allowed Rep. Omar and Rep. Tlaib to visit. They are a disgrace. Hours later, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu complied, canceling the official visit of the two elected American officials, declaring in a statement their intent is to hurt Israel. Both Omar and Tlaib criticize Israeli policies concerning the Palestinians and support movements to boycott Israel. But this was a stunning moment. Just last week, House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy said he thought the congresswomen should be allowed to visit.
In speaking with the president, he knows there are people that have a difference of opinion. I think it'd be healthy for anyone that has that opinion should come just as all these members have.
Both congresswomen have become targets of the president and his supporters. Today, Congresswoman Omar issued a statement of her own. Trump's Muslim ban is what Israel is implementing, this time against two duly elected members of Congress.
So let's get to Terry Moranis with us live tonight from the...
that's antithetical to anything I learned in school.
If somebody disagrees with you, don't let them, you know... But you think you've got a good case to make. Don't let them come and see what your case is. Right?
The remarkable thing is that he said Israel would be weak if they let them in. No,
that's just absurd.
It's just the opposite.
Israel would be strong if you let them in. And in fact, that has historically been Israel's position. You know, sharp critics of Israeli policy have regularly visited Israel. And you know who they visited with? You know, like deputy speakers of the Knesset and leading political figures, because there are sharp critics of Israel's policies in the government of Israel. And so this is not merely, you know, like it's not that Israel is doing this. Netanyahu, who is in a really rough re-election race, is doing this because Trump is, for reasons that we'll all struggle with, popular in Israel. And so Netanyahu is doing this because he wants Trump to, you know, be sympathetic toward him, supportive of him, as Netanyahu deals with his reelection run.
You know, Trump may be popular in Israel, but that doesn't necessarily mean that people in Israel are going to reward Bibi for doing this.
Oh, no. I don't think it's going to work. I think that Netanyahu may well lose. But this is part of the desperation there. And that's the point I want to get to, is that what we're looking at here is Trump running a policy as regards the world through his domestic, battles, right? He doesn't like these two members of Congress, so he's telling Israel to ban them. We have Netanyahu accepting this pressure for political, domestic political reasons on his end. And very few people are looking at what I see as a constitutional crisis here. And I don't mean a constitutional crisis at the, full-blown, the stuff they make movies about. This is a baseline one. We have a system of separated powers in this country. The Congress is the equal of the executive, the legislative equal to the executive. If the President of the United States has the power and the position to, kind of pressure other countries not to admit members of Congress he disagrees with, he is undermining their ability to go out and gather information and, be a part of this system of checks and balances. And where that is, a lot of people are focused on Rashida Tlaib, whose grandmother lives in the West Bank, and there's certainly a humanitarian argument there.
Evidently Israel has conceded on that one. They're saying that they'll allow her to
do it. But Tlaib has said no because they want to restrict her speech during the trip. And so it's a back and forth on that. But I want to put that one, to one position and look at the case of Ilhan Omar. Ilhan Omar, when she got to Congress, you have to fill out a form on what committees you want to sit on. She said she wanted to sit on foreign affairs. And Elliot Engel, who disagrees with her passionately on Middle Eastern issues, said yes. Come on, you'll be on the committee. That was an exception to somebody who disagreed with him. But the reason he did that, I won't go into his mind, but I'll say one of the reasons I think it occurred, is because Ilhan Omar is deeply committed to human rights in all sorts of countries around the world. And turning her away from Israel because she has a different opinion and because she is critical, even Elliot Engel, one of the greatest supporters of Israel in Congress, has said that's a bad idea. And here's why it's a really bad idea, Sly. Because Ilhan Omar also criticizes governments in Saudi Arabia and in countries in like Sudan and places like that. She raises really pointed human rights questions.
Well, just like the president. World. Just like the president and his family.
But if we...
you didn't even acknowledge that. That was a punchline.
It was a punchline. but I want to finish this one core thought. What happens when the next country says, she was turned away because she's got these extreme views, so we're not going to let her come here. We're not going to let her, come in. You are taking a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee and essentially restricting and limiting that person's ability to go out and advocate, but also to learn. It's destructive toward not just the Congress, but the system of checks and balances at a fundamental level. And members of Congress should be screaming about this. This ought to be, way up front as an issue. And, Mark Pocan has said or suggested that perhaps members of Congress shouldn't make trips until, this is resolved. And I think his point is well taken. It's that serious an issue. And I do think, unfortunately, so much of the media has reduced it to a personal conflict, right? The president doesn't like these people. This is about much deeper constitutional issues.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to SlysOffice.com.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.